There's been a major shift in this area of the world, somewhat precipitated by the American involvement in Iraq. And when we went in and took Saddam Hussein out, and the Ba'athist Party, which was a Sunni party, which is the majority of Muslims in the world, 85%, but in Iraq, it was not the majority group. The majority group is Shia. So you have a whole zone of Shia in place that concerns Saudi Arabia, it concerns other Sunni parts. And ISIS, ISIL, is primarily interested in recovering this region for a very traditional Al-Qaeda-like Sunni government.
Can you explain the difference between Shia and Sunni Muslims and how that plays in?
The Sunnis have a tradition that when the Prophet Muhammad died, he had not established a successor, and he left it to the community to choose the successor. The Shia believe that, in fact, he did leave his wishes that a descendant of his be the successor, and on and on and on. 85% believe that the community is to choose the leader, and that leader would be called the caliph. So a very small story, we thought, back in June of 2014, was that the leader of ISIS-ISIL's name, al-Baghdadi, proclaimed himself the caliph. There had not been a proclaimed caliph since 1923. It was arresting for me to learn this week that Yemen and Libya and Egypt have groups now related to ISIS, and it was in response to his claim to be the caliph calling for their loyalty.
Now, it seems the group's brutal tactics keep ramping up. How does that play into their success?
Yeah, I think that one of the great ironies for Western observers is we assume that the beheadings and burning the Jordanian pilot alive would isolate them. In actual fact, it seems to have helped recruiting. And we're talking about young people here. We're talking about the age of my students. And what the appeal is, come join us and we'll change the world. One of the ways we understand the rage of these young people and the rage of the group is this term that someone invented called dehumiliation, and that is we're going to act to take the humiliation away. And by beheading, no matter who it is, Americans, Japanese, Italians, or French, or whatever, what they're saying is we're not afraid of anybody.
What are the fundamental differences between Al-Qaeda and ISIS-ISIL?
Al-Qaeda was prepared to accept that there's a map that has Iraq here and Syria here, Jordan here, you know, all those countries that in a sense were created by Europe after World War I, all the boundaries. ISIS-ISIL says these boundaries mean nothing. The Islamic State includes all this area. Here's another way I would distinguish the two. If Al-Qaeda managed in Iraq to take an oil field, I would guess that they would have probably destroyed it, understanding that they did not have the troops to keep it. When ISIS-ISIL goes into Iraq and takes an oil field, they continue pumping oil, and they sell it on the black market, bringing in $3 million a day. They're more self-sustaining, which makes them much more dangerous.
How does this affect the American Muslim community?
This is the worst thing that could happen to the American Muslim community. If we isolate and humiliate Muslims here, ISIS wins.